30 degrees and a wind chill of 24. In Joliet, we're still seeing some drizzle, and it's 33. Kankakee, drizzle and 33 at the moment. Bloomington, Illinois, it's cloudy and 32. Decatur, it is cloudy and 36 with a wind chill of 25. In Peoria, it's cloudy and 33. In Springfield right now, cloudy and 33 also. Taylorville, light snow and 34. In Rantoul, it's partly sunny and 36 degrees. And here in Champaign, it's cloudy and 34 with a dew point of 31 and a wind chill of 24. At Friends Plaza in Urbana, outside of our studios, it's 34 degrees. You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine on WILL.
I'm Zach Grant, manager of the Sustainable Student Farm at the University of Illinois. The farm is lending a hand to WILL during February's Clear the Air radio drive. Everyone who pledges at least $120 will receive three starter plants, basil, tomato, and pepper. The plants will be grown at our farm in Urbana and will be available for pickup on Saturday, April 13th at the Horticulture Club's Mom's Day Flower Show. Go to willpledge.org or call 217-244-9455 for more information.
You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine on WILL. I'm Chris Berube. Back in 2000, student enrollment in the Arcola School District was about 80% white and 20% Latino. These days, it's closer to 50-50. Arcola is like a microcosm for the rest of the country right now, where the Latino population is rapidly growing. The president of the parent-teacher organization at an Arcola grade school is at the center of this change, as Illinois Public Media's Sean Powers reports in the latest installment of our Neighbors series.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas!
Smile!
I first met Maria Garcia, who goes by Lupita, back in December at a Christmas party for Arcola students and their families. The party, held in the elementary school's cafeteria, is packed. Garcia is constantly on her feet, passing out cookies and hot chocolate.
You want a hot chocolate?
When she's not working, Garcia is surveying the crowd and making new connections.
I know the most people here. She's my friend, daughter, the other girl too.
A couple of years ago, Garcia joined Arcola Elementary's Parent Teacher Association, formerly known as Project Success. She came to Arcola from Mexico City more than 12 years ago. When she initially arrived to visit her brother, she didn't plan on staying put, but that changed after she met her husband.
It's a small town. You know everybody at school. You can live with your door open and nothing happen.
Garcia is a stay-at-home mom with three children. When she isn't working on school business or watching over her kids, she's taking English classes three times a week at Lakeland Community College. In September, Garcia became Arcola Elementary's first Latino PTA president, in part to help attract a more diverse group of parents. Angela Ramirez came to Arcola more than a decade ago from Mexico, but she didn't get involved in the PTA until about a year ago. She says she always wanted to be better connected to her kids' progress in the classroom, but never felt comfortable enough to join because of her limited English. Ramirez says Garcia changed that for her.
That was one of the things she inspired me to do. She gave me the confidence I needed so it wouldn't be so difficult to understand the meetings.
Garcia doesn't take all the credit for drumming up interest in the PTA. She saves a lot of that praise for Arcola Elementary School principal Angie Gentry, who encouraged her to become the PTA president.
Gently nudged her, and she was very willing.
Principal Gentry says having a Latino PTA president at Arcola Elementary was long overdue.
It's almost been a need for parents in the community to come together because we can't separate our kids from wanting to play with each other, and we can't let our language barriers prevent us from our kids enjoying the company of each other and getting to know each other's cultures and families.
About a month after the Christmas party, I went to one of the PTA meetings. Roughly 10 people, including an interpreter, are seated at a table. One of the first issues Garcia brings up is raising money for the school. Seated next to her is her ace in the hole, her husband, Valente.
This is actually my first meeting. I kind of let her take ownership of it. Today she asked me to come in and help.
It doesn't take long for the group to embrace Valente. At one point, he suggests holding a softball tournament for parents as a way to raise money.
You guys are planning on having a tournament. I've done many, so I know how to run it. And what it takes.
Mr. Vice President.
The diversity of this group goes beyond race, language, and culture. During her tenure as PTA president, Garcia says she wants the school's library and playground to expand, and for there to be a greater emphasis on Spanish language education.
The Hispanic people and the American people need to know. We need more staff, more for our kids. So we need to work more and together.
It's these dreams that help break down language barriers that might keep some parents from getting involved in a growing Arcola. I'm Sean Powers, Illinois Public Media.
The Neighbors series runs periodically on WILL as a way of introducing you to some of our neighbors throughout Eastern Central Illinois. If you have a neighbor that you think might be a good fit for our series, you can email us at willnewsroom@illinois.edu. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Earlier this week, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn terminated the state's contract with its largest public employee union. The lack of progress on a new contract has the union considering a strike. Henry Bayer, executive director of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Council 31, says that it remains an option. Bayer says there's support among members, and he alleges that Pat Quinn might want to force a work stoppage. Bayer talked with Illinois Public Radio's Sean Crawford about the possibility earlier this week.
You're working without a contract with state government at this point. How are the negotiations going toward getting a new deal?
Well, the negotiations, unfortunately, are going very, very slowly. We began negotiations in December of 2011. The contract expired at the end of June of 2012. We extended the contract through November, at which point the governor took the unprecedented step of terminating the contract. We are still in negotiations. There are still lots of issues that are on the table, and we're moving through them very slowly, very slowly.
Well, the fact that that previous contract was severed by the administration, it seems to me that that would make negotiations more difficult and that you would want some assurance that the state abides by what it, what's in that contract.
Well, we certainly do. And, of course, as you know, in the previous contract, the state didn't abide by it. They didn't pay the negotiated pay rates that were due. And when an independent arbitrator ordered that they pay them, they appealed that decision to court. The court said people are entitled to the money. The state once again turned around and is appealing the court's decision. Meanwhile, the clock is ticking because the court also said they had to pay interest on the money that's owed to our members.
A memo published recently gave direction from the union to members, I guess recommendations, if you will. And from what I read on that, they included things like, you know, avoid some major purchases, go to the doctor now, get your prescriptions filled, giving some indication to those of us on the outside that that a strike is a real possibility. So I guess I have to ask, is it?
Well, it is a very real possibility. You know, we've been negotiating contracts with governors here in Illinois going back to the middle 70s. We've always been able to settle those contracts without a strike. However, it appears from the posture that this administration has taken that perhaps they'd like to provoke a strike. Certainly, they know that what they're seeking in these negotiations is totally unreasonable, yet they've not moved off of their position in, of unreasonableness in all the months we've been negotiating. So they may, in fact, force a strike, but that is a decision that ultimately will be up to the members, who would have to vote to authorize a strike, and then up to the elected bargaining committee to actually call a strike if they feel that negotiations are no longer fruitful.
You hear from people quite regularly regarding this issue. Do you feel as though the membership, if it came down to that, would go for a strike?
Well, it certainly appears that way. I mean, there's a lot of anger out there, as you can imagine. To first be denied a pay raise that you're entitled to, that the governor had agreed to, and then have him turn around and say, I'm not going to do it, and then have him terminate the contract, and then propose in negotiations that people go 3 years with no pay increase, and over that same period of time pay $10,000 out of their pocket, $10,000 more for their health insurance. They're already paying for premiums for their health insurance and co-payments and deductibles, and the state wants to increase that even more to the tune, on average, of about $10,000 per employee. We think that's an unreasonable position. I think most people would agree.
What would have to happen for a work stoppage like that to take place? I know there are a lot of unions have to file intent to strike notices. Would that be the same in this situation?
Yeah, under the law, I believe it's the 5-day notice. First off, our members would have to vote for it, would have to vote to authorize the strike. Then the bargaining committee, which is elected by our members, if they had that authorization, would have to decide, well, negotiations are not going anywhere, and then they would set a strike date.
And I just want to clarify, at this point, you're not at that point in this whole process, but you're not ruling out it could happen.
No, I'm not ruling that out at all. They said a lot of anger and frustration among our members because we have been negotiating as long as we have, because the governor has refused to honor our previous contract, and because the governor is taking such an unreasonable position in this set of negotiations.
Henry Bayer, the AFSCME Council 31 Executive Director, speaking with Illinois Public Radio's Sean Crawford. The Quitt administration says that it continues meeting with the organization to reach a contract that is fair for both state workers and the taxpayers of Illinois. You can see more of our coverage of what's happening with the union and the state at will.illinois.edu.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 22nd of February, 2013. It's the birthday of George Washington, first president of the United States, born Westmoreland County, Virginia, 1732, whose favorite foods were mashed sweet potatoes with coconut, string beans with mushrooms, cream of peanut soup, salt cod, and pineapples. According to John Adams, Washington lost all but one of his teeth by cracking Brazilian nuts between them and got dentures made out of a hippopotamus tusk, which would fit over his one remaining real tooth, but the dentures were always rubbing against that tooth and he was constantly in pain, which he used opium to alleviate. He snored loudly in his sleep, and instead of wearing a powdered wig, as others did, he put powder on his own hair. He was not good at spelling. He had a slight speech impediment, and so his inaugural address was very, very short, 133 words, took about 90 seconds to deliver. It's the birthday of the woman who wrote, "My candle burns at both ends, it will not last the night. But ah, my foes, and oh, my friends, it gives a lovely light." Edna St. Vincent Millay, born Rockland, Maine, 1892, lived the bohemian life in Greenwich Village and wrote, "Safe upon the solid rock, the ugly houses."